Talking with Phil Tsang, U.S. Meat Export Federation. Phil, I understand you're just back from Mexico, and you know they're the number one export That's destination right. for beef and pork for the U.S. Obviously, we got to keep them happy.
Yeah, Mexico, I think, is going to be a good year for us in 2010. Last year, of course, the financial crisis affected Mexico. The peso depreciation, of course, made it more expensive for them to buy our product. We saw this really affect us in the beef complex. Of course, the H1N1 issue also was a major issue as far as the pork complex. But I think we're looking at increases next year both in pork and beef, and Mexico looks good to us. I think we're doing a lot of things in Mexico to look at new markets and new areas and markets within the market. And so I'm encouraged by what it looks like next year. Also, you know, we're looking at with Mexico. You know, they filed anti-dumping duties against us in 2000. They renewed those in 2005, and we're looking in 2010 to see if we can address those, because if we could still level that playing field, that would also produce dividends for U.S. producers.
How much heartburn is going on down there over our country of origin labeling?
Well, it's a major issue. You don't go anywhere where that's not brought up, and for them, it's retarded their live cattle sales to the U.S., and it's affected their industry, and so they're very open about the fact that this has been very disadvantageous to them.
What about the situation in Russia? How do you think this is going to play out, or where do you think this is going to go as far as the current direction and where it may head?
Well, Russia obviously is their whole game plan ultimately is to be self-sufficient in as many areas as they possibly can. They've targeted poultry and they've targeted pork as being two key areas in that regard. And so what we're seeing obviously is this abject protectionism. Where to a large degree they're saying that they would like to see us comply totally with Russian standards and specifications. We do have some challenges with that, some issues with that, but we're working with our government. It looks like the issues on poultry are going to be a little longer term, but on pork it looks like we're going to start seeing some of these plants relisted. I'd say we're about 95% there where we need to be with the Russians, but we do sense that this is going to probably be an issue for us down the road until we can really come to terms. So we believe constructive engagement with the Russians is one of the ways to go, because ultimately we have to look at their system. We've brought Russians to this country to understand our processes, our production, and hopefully this will help narrow the gaps.
Are we in pretty good shape with them when it comes to the post-BSE situation as far as, you know, those rules?
Well, I think as far as the BSE issue, I think we're past that. You know, they're close to Europe, and they've been dealing with the Europeans for a long time, and so they're very familiar with the BSE and all the risk mitigation measures. That's not really been the issue with us. One of the things is the Russians have their standards, and they want us to comply. And, of course, the U.S. believes very strongly in this principle of equivalency, that from the standpoint of equivalency, if they have equivalent standards to ours, they can export to us, or any country can, and that's what we try to maintain with them. But they're saying that we have to meet their exacting standards, and that's where we have a little bit of a rub.
Another area to talk about, South Korea, and still the sticking points on getting the free trade agreement between the two countries.
Well, I think, you know, South Korea is a market of tremendous promise for us. We're starting to see our beef sales appreciate in there. We're doing over 1,500 metric tons a week into South Korea. We've launched a two trust campaign. That's worked out very well for us. Our pork exports are going well into Korea, so I think we're encouraged. And actually, the won is getting stronger, so this is allowing them to buy our product at a more opportune price. The beauty of the FTA with Korea is the fact that what it does as far as border protection, the Koreans have some of the highest duties. They have a 40% duty basically on beef, a 20% duty on pork, and we would start seeing these duties starting to come down with the FTA. And, you know, this to me is one of the beauties of this thing, because if you had a 40% duty eradicated in time, this would be huge to our producers.
But the competition from Australia is really key in all that.
The competition's from Australia, but they don't have their what they call EPA, their economic partnership agreement, worked out yet. And so that's why now we have a chance to kind of get the jump on these folks. And right now with Australia and the fact that they've had 6 years in Korea of pretty much open range, this is good for us if we can get this going. So the more that we can get this Korea agreement initialed, it's in our interest, it's in the interest of U.S. agriculture and everybody concerned, the better it's going to be. And I think also, the president has even signaled that, you know, trade now has become, as he's identified it as a major priority, the fact that it is very encouraging for agriculture.
How concerned are you about the Taiwanese situation with their lawmakers making this statement after they had negotiated a deal?
Well, it's very unfortunate that it turned out the way that it did. Obviously the Taiwan government did not do enough risk communication to explain, you know, what this means as far as going to all cattle all ages. It was unfortunate they took the step to pass legislation relegating certain items from the United States as not being able to be sold to Taiwan. But I think the U.S. is correct in maintaining its position. We have an agreement, and that we need them to honor that agreement. And in a lot of these countries, when we make an agreement, whether it's Asia, Europe, Japan, whatever, you change your domestic laws to honor your agreement. So we think in time that this is going to be the case in Taiwan, and we hope that the Taiwanese government doesn't persist in this, because it's been a very good market for our industry. You know, since the market opened up in 2005, we've eclipsed the export levels of 2003 every year since. So there's demand there, there's buying power there, and there's an appreciation for our product. So, you know, the quicker we can get this behind us, the better it's going to be.
Does that lead into getting off the policy of all or nothing and going more of a ratchet-up process?
Well, I think that from the industry standpoint, here at this own meeting, the NCBA a year ago said they passed a resolution trying to move from that. We've seen other major organizations do the same. I mean, and from us who are dealing in these markets, to me, you have to take each market separately and individually. And, you know, it's kind of like a defense. You know, different football teams have different defenses or basketball teams, and you have to set your offense based on that defense. And to expect that you can run one play and have it all work, that's nice if you can do it, but it's just not realistic. And so I think that that's one thing that we want to work on, is how we can amend this policy so we don't, how would I say, excite the countries that we already have an agreement with, but also give us the latitude to move and maneuver when it comes to Japan, when it comes to China and some of these other markets.
Japan. I mean, you know, are we ever going to go 20 to 30, you think?
Well, we have to engage the Japanese, and that's one of the things that's been very difficult. We haven't been doing this, you know, because our position has been all or nothing for up heretofore, and the Japanese have said, no, we're going to do this in steps. And I think that probably we will. There's a possibility that they can maybe agree to the provisions of the OIE and then work in steps to get there. And so I'm encouraged. I think right now, though, it's gotten more difficult with Japan, with the change in the government, the other issues that have seemed to eclipse the beef issue. And so I think it's going to be more difficult for us. The atmosphere there is more, the atmospherics are more difficult than they were in the past, but it doesn't mean that we can't engage them and get going on this issue. As I look at the Japanese market, there aren't detractors there. There isn't consumers. We've done a lot to win the consumers with our We Care campaign. There's no opposition from the consumers. The farmers have not been in opposition. We've never seen them protest. There really isn't any opposition. The trade wants it. The retailers, the food service want our product. So it seems to me that this is the time for us to engage the Japanese.
And you still see the upswing in China as well.
We see an upswing in China. As you know, the economy there has been positive. They have close to 10% growth there. They had a big stimulus package at the beginning of the year. It seems to have paid off. And when you go to China, you don't have any sense anymore, even in Asia, of any financial issues. You know, we had a huge hit, you know, when we take a look at this. And a lot of times we look at all these things as being through our lens, but they didn't have a housing bubble in China or in Europe or in Japan. They didn't have a banking crisis. You know, we had a housing bubble, we had a banking crisis, and then we had, of course, the financial. And frankly, those markets were able to turn around a lot quicker. And right now, they're importing. The yen is strong. The Chinese want our product. And, you know, the greater China area, like I say, we were up about 20%. So the more that we can access that market, even though we're doing well through back channels getting into China, we could be doing so much more and so much better if we had direct access.
Now we're getting most of our meat into China through Hong Kong?
Through Hong Kong, through Vietnam, through other unofficial sources. There's a lot of unofficial trade that's going on with China. But obviously, if we could have that opened up, and as far as the Chinese are concerned, they have been open. They have announced 3 years ago that they will open up or are open to 30-month cattle boneless, which was the same approach that we took with Canada in opening our markets. But the U.S. position has been it's got to be all or nothing, and so we have not recognized that. And so in some ways we're missing a huge opportunity. And even if we look at Mexico, it's been a very successful market for us, but they're at 30 months. So, you know, we it doesn't – we're inconsistent in this, and I think that's what makes it very difficult. And I think also with the fact that we've had to go back in Korea and the fact that we've had to go back in Taiwan and go to a full opening and then go compromise and go back to a 30 months, it makes it all the more difficult for us to go to the Japanese or the Chinese and say, you got to go all the way when we've already acquiesced when it comes to those two markets. So I do think we need a review of how we're dealing with these countries and our strategic approach on this BSE access. And I do think that's probably going to happen with some of the new people that they have in place there and their new emphasis on trade.